So here's my story. The story was a common one. Different weeks, but the same story, and unfortunately with the same outcome. The girls were still young, and Michelle was staying at home while I was working at the lab. Her days were long, so on occasion, Michelle would go out to visit her parents and take the girls with her. Generally, this would happen on a Friday, and she would spend the night in Kansas and come home sometime on Saturday. Rather than drive a second car out to Kansas, I would just go home and spend the evening by myself. This was a problem. At some point in the week, Michelle would let me know she was going to spend the Friday night at her parents'. Friday morning, the conversation would start in my head. It's not going to happen today. I'm not going to do it again. But I knew this wasn't true. It never ended this way. I always failed. And I knew I would fail again. As the day progressed, my thoughts would gravitate to an evening by myself. The earlier resolve to resist the urge and be good slowly gave way to a growing desire to give in once again, just once more. By the end of the day, the very predictable decision was made and the routine began once again. With cash in my hand, I would stop and purchase the desired wares and go home. Maybe I'd do a few small chores, maybe I would have a quick bite to eat, but my growing desire was to indulge just once more. Home alone with the curtains closed, I would indulge in my earlier purchases. Before Michelle and the girls would return the next day, the evidence was long gone. But not the shame. There was always shame. Internally, I would beat myself up and ask why. Why? Why does this keep happening? I prayed for forgiveness, for God's mercy and grace, yet beneath the surface, the desire for one more time was always there, just waiting for the next opportunity. I was an addict. I was a slave to my desires, and I lacked both the strength and the willpower to overcome my addiction. I never saw myself as an addict or a slave until years later when I could look back with clearer eyes. I have no idea how much time and money was wasted related to my addiction. I do know the cost of my addiction was far more than just time and money. If it were not for a direct question from Michelle, one Friday night, my addiction. My addiction to pornography would have cost me my soul. I've never been terrified to give a sermon. Till today. Some of you knew about that, most of you did not. I hid it really, really, really well. Too well. We'll talk about that later on. Hopefully the hard part's over. The word addiction is most readily attached to substance abuse, alcohol, tobacco, and various illicit drugs. When we think of an addict, we think of someone who's ruled and suffering from the effects of various chemicals on their mind and their body. Proverbs chapter 23, starting with verse 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look at the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly, At last it bites like a serpent, it stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will utter perverse things. You will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, "They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake and seek another drink?" This is what we think of when we think of an addict. We think of a drunk. We think of someone caught up in cocaine or methamphetamine. But addictions are much more extensive than this limited perspective. In the world of psychology, addiction is sometimes defined as repeated behavior, substance-related or not, in which a person feels compelled to persist regardless of its negative impact on the person's life and the lives of others. A drunk knows what they're doing is wrong, but they still do it. A cocaine addict knows that they could die, but they still do it. A Christian who's a pornography addict knows the cost, but they still do it. When we see addictions in this light, it opens up a much broader set of activities which have nothing to do with drugs or alcohol. These are commonly referred to as addictive behaviors. They are pornography and other things related to sex, gambling, internet and social media, specifically related to the phone, video games, shopping, binge eating, food addiction, thrill-seeking activities, and plastic surgery. I've never heard of that as being an addiction, but apparently it is. But when I looked at addictive behaviors, these were the ones that showed up all the time. Some of these, pornography and gambling, are clearly sinful activities and difficult for me to conceive of any situation where participating in them is a godly activity. We'll spend a fair amount of time discussing them today, specifically pornography. The others may seem rather innocuous. What if I enjoy shopping? So what? It's my money to spend how I choose. What's the harm in spending time on social media and Facebook? It's how I connect with my brothers and sisters across the country. Why is that so bad? The problem becomes when these behaviors begin to dominate our lives and become our way of escape from the troubles of the world. That's where the problem begins. It's not just checking up on your brothers and sisters. It's when you spend hours and hours and hours mindlessly scrolling because that's your habit. When you can't put the phone down and you're just itching to get to it, there's a problem. These behaviors become problematic when they begin to rob our resources like time, money, or our attention, which we should be devoted to something else. So we're going to go through some statistics. We'll start with mine, with pornography. 40 million American adults regularly visit pornography websites with more than 28,000 visitors every second. I want these to settle in with you. 28,000 every second of Americans. So it's not surprising that 12% of internet sites are related to pornography. College-age students, 80% of men, report using or having viewed pornography. 70% of men 18 to 34 visit pornography sites in a typical month. 10% of U.S. adults admit to having an addiction to internet pornography. 90% of children 8 to 16 have viewed pornography, with the largest consumers 12 to 17-year-old boys. 50% of those who call themselves pastors regularly look at pornography. And it is not just a problem with men. 1 in 6 women struggle with pornography addiction. So let's just be completely honest about this. We are not immune to this problem. These walls do not protect us. It is alive and well within the church and within our brotherhood, and we have spent too much time in the past trying to convince ourselves otherwise. We have not talked about this enough. Now, that's changed. At the Murray Road meeting, it was brought up in one of the lessons. The Prince Road meeting last weekend, you guys got hit with it. You're going to get hit with it again. The camp out, you're going to get hit with it again. And I hope we don't ever let these things die. I was talking with a mother of a young man in the church, talking about my struggles with pornography and others, and how it is all over, including in the brotherhood. And her statement was, quote, "I just didn't think boys in the church would do something like that." Do not deceive yourselves. They do. Michelle and I have had numerous comments about this, some that I wish would stop, some that I'm okay with. But she said once, Satan is succeeding in destroying our men. So if we're going to be even more honest about it, it is very likely that there are multiple individuals here today who have viewed porn at some point during this week, including possibly even today. I'm confident there are multiple men right now who just want me to shut up about this and really hope that their wives, their girlfriends, or their fiancés do not ask them. Ask them. Ask them. Sorry. Regarding social media, 56.8% of the world's population is active on social media. The average person spends about 2.5 hours on social media every day, women more so than men. In 2019, 40% of users age 18 to 22 self-reported feeling addicted to social media. 7 in 10 teenagers and young adults have a social media addiction. 55% of all social media users admit to checking social media while driving. 41% of users feel too much time on social media increases negativity in their lives. And for those who use social media more than 3 hours a day, they report feeling negatively about their lives. This is nothing to pat myself on the back about, but I'm not on social media. So I can't, but I'm comfortable with this. I'm pretty comfortable with this. I can pretty much guarantee that many of you have already been on social media today. Whatever updates saying that you're coming to the meeting or whatever it may be, you've made numerous posts or looked at other posts. And it may be that some of you have already posted here. Now, I didn't know where I was going to start in the meeting. I thought I was going to be like the third, but they stuck me at the front. So there's a pretty good chance that some of you haven't looked at it already. But it happens in services. Why? Because I've seen it. I've seen it. Which makes me... So, do you see the problem here? That we're in the midst of our brethren, and we're supposed to be singing and praying and encouraging one another, and instead we are so caught up and so addicted that we just kind of have to pull it out real quick and just take a quick look. That's a sign of an addiction, is what that is. That's a sign that you're not really here. So other addictive behaviors regarding gambling, approximately 85% of U.S. adults have gambled at least once in their lives, 60% in the past year. 2 million adults, which is about 1% of the population, are estimated to meet the criteria for severe gambling problems in any given year. And another 4 to 6 million, or about 2 to 3%, would be considered to have mild or moderate gambling problems and have experienced problems due to this behavior. When it comes to video gaming, I forgot to mention about related to the phone. We'll backtrack. Going back to the phone, I looked at stats on the phone use. The average person spends 3 hours and 15 minutes on their phones each day. That's the average person. 1 in 5 smartphone users spends upwards to 4.5 hours on their phones every day. And on average, people check their phones 58 times per day. I thought about doing this. You may want to go ahead and try it. I challenge you to take your phone and put it away from you, out of reach. Sometimes we can't do that because it's like our little pacifier. We got to stick it. It's still there. It's right there. or if our phone buzzes or we get a notification, we got to reach down, we got to check it. Now, if you have a watch on, that doesn't count. You haven't met the task. Because you say, my phone's away, but you're checking your watch. We actually, one of the guys at my job ended up partly getting fired because of this. He could not stay off the phone. And I have some in my section that I have to get onto, that they're on their phone all the time. Regarding gaming, in 2021, the average user spent 8.5 hours per week, a full work day. 44% played daily, 25% at least 12 hours weekly. One-third have played at least 5 consecutive hours. And I have personally seen individuals playing games during the assembly on multiple occasions. Walking behind them and seeing them playing a game on their phone, and they see that I walk behind them and they turn it off. This is a problem. Again, they're not present in the assembly. We haven't talked about these topics. We don't talk about addictions. Notice I haven't talked about drug and alcohol use. Those are also present within the Brotherhood. People struggle with those. Today, they struggle with those. But we're going to focus mainly on these behavioral things because we don't really, I don't know why, but we haven't talked about them. But they are problems. And they will cost us dearly as individuals, as families, and as congregations. At its core, an addiction is really just a habit, but it's one with really, really, really bad consequences. A habit, there's a book called The Power of Habit, and Charles Duhigg, and he says habit is pretty simple. You start with a cue, something that triggers you, that creates a behavior that ends up with a reward. So we'll go with gambling. It may be something as a sight or a sound or driving by and seeing flashing lights, and that's the cue. Whatever that cue is, that kicks it in, and then a behavior goes in, and it ends up with a reward. The hope that maybe I'm going to win. Maybe this is my turn. All right, even though I spent $50, I got $10 in the slots. That reward is what they're looking for. And that's that habit. So for me, my cues were whenever Michelle and I would get cross. It's pretty much always my fault, but if there was tension and strife within the marriage, seek some way to alleviate that, and porn was one of the things that I would turn to. Or if I knew that I had an evening to myself, then that was a trigger. That was one of the cues that would create this routine. For addictions, especially those which we know run contrary to our conscience, there is a fourth phase in the cycle. It is the cue, the routine, the reward, and then there's the remorse. There is always remorse. Always. Why do I keep doing this? I am a horrible person. But it's actually much deeper than just a repetitive action. So bear with me a little bit, getting into why we do these things. We say, well, it's just sin and temptation. Well, yes, but it's a little deeper than that sometimes. I spoke with a counselor recently who said that all addictions, substance or behavior, are all the same. They're all rooted in the same thing. They are rooted in an attempt to escape negative feelings or emotional pain. Remember what I told you one of my cues was? When there was tension within my wife, between Michelle and me. I didn't like it. So I needed to escape that. I needed it to go away. So porn was my escape. It was my way of alleviating myself of that emotional distress. Drug addicts have a bad day. Or someone who's addicted to cigarettes. They have a struggle. They have tension. And what do they do? I got to get a smoke. Why? It's relieving them. It's an escape. So I've shared with you my personal cues. I read a statement regarding eating addictions. I eat because I'm unhappy, and I'm unhappy because I eat. It's a vicious cycle. And that is true. I hated that I was addicted to pornography. But even in those down times, that's what I would turn to, because those were the only things that would give me some sense of enjoyment. As terrible as that sounds. So consider this in your own lives. What do you do when you are bored, when you're restless, when you're having a bad day, when you're having a bad moment, when you become cross with a friend or with a spouse? Where do you go to find relief from those feelings of angst? Do you pick up your phone? Do you go open up the refrigerator? Do you think, I got to go shopping? I need to buy something that'll make me feel better. Now, we have to be careful here, because this sounds a lot like that this is really just an emotional thing and not a spiritual thing. James chapter 1 answers this for us. James chapter 1, verses 14 and 15. Each one is tempted when he is drawn away from his own desires and enticed. And when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. I still make mistakes in my marriage where Michelle and I still have strife. But I have to make the choice of what I'm going to do with that now. I have to make the choice of how I'm going to fix that. Am I going to turn to God, or am I going to turn to something else? 1 John chapter 3, verse 4 in the New King James reads, "Whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness." And later on in verse 7 it says, "Little children, let no one deceive you. He who practices righteousness is righteous, just as he is righteous." The English Standard Version brings out a more complete rendering of the Greek word here. Everyone who makes a practice or makes a habit of sinning is also practicing lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. Little children, let no one deceive you. Whoever practices or makes a habit of righteousness is righteous, as he is righteous. What is your habit? What are your habits? Are they righteous? Are the things that you tend to gravitate towards in your spare time and your trials, are they righteous or are they sinful? Both situations, John is alluding to the habit and the general lifestyles of individuals. Remember that all addictions, including substances and behaviors, are rooted in whole or in part to escape negative feelings or emotional pain, but it is short-lived. My periods of regret were a whole lot longer than the short periods of escape that I had with pornography. It is short-sighted, and it's a momentary moment of enjoyment with really long-term consequences. Willing to sacrifice eternity for a moment here. That's what you're giving up with this. It's what I was about to give up. And when we do this, we are really robbing God of opportunities to provide us real and lasting comfort. We are robbing God. Malachi talks about, will a man rob God? And he's talking about the sacrifices. Malachi says, well, how will a man rob God? And he talks about, you don't even give your governors the stuff that you give me because it's awful. But we are robbing God when we turn to objects for comfort rather than turning to God. Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, is what Jesus says. Come to me when you're having a bad day. Come to me when there is strife, when you need comfort, when you need relief. Come to me and I will help you. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Philippians 4:16. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. 1 Peter 5, 6, and 7. What we end up doing is turning to an object rather than turning to God. When I pulled this out, I was turning to an object for relief. When you pull out the bottle, you're turning to an object. When you pull out the powder, you're turning to an object. When you go shopping, you're turning to an object. An addiction is turning to an object. Devotion is turning to God. And this is how our addictions, regardless if they are plainly sinful or not, rob God. We are seeking relief in an object, and it really is a lie. There is no relief at all. The robbery is not the only thing. It doesn't just occur between us and God. The addiction robs us as well. Addictions rob us of our strength. For me, deep down, I knew I would always fail. Always. When those Fridays would come, I'd tell myself, I'm not going to fail. I'm not going to do this. Or I knew that Michelle wasn't going to be home, and I'd have a few hours. I'm not going to do this. I knew I would, because I was a slave. I had no strength. And this is the classic example of being a slave to sin. Romans 6:16, do you not know to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey? You are that one slave whom you obey, whether to sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness. I was a slave to my addiction. I was a slave to pornography and numerous other things associated with that. I simply was unable, and actually, to be honest, unwilling to stop. Some of you are thinking, I can quit anytime I want to. Then do it. I dare you to do it. If you think that you can stop anytime you want and you haven't, you are lying to yourself. You're lying because you probably don't want to. I had a conversation with a young man. His addiction was drug use, and he said, I know it's wrong, but I just don't want to stop. I appreciated his honesty, because that's really where the problem's at. If you don't fix the want to, you're not going to solve the problem. I didn't want to stop. And the problem is, on my own, I couldn't stop. I tried all sorts of things. I didn't tell Michelle about it. I'd say prayers all the time. That prayers were half-hearted. I even got onto my computer without her knowing about it, and I put a porn blocker on there that would block all of those sites. And you have to set up a password. So I created a scrambled password, made that my password, and then immediately deleted the password so that way I wouldn't know what it was. So I couldn't uninstall that. It still didn't work, because you still have opportunities at some point. The temptation, that took away an opportunity, but it didn't take away the desire. You have to take away the desire. Addictions rob us of our resources, which we could use to glorify God or serve others. Think of a shopping addiction. You are spending money as part of your addiction that you could use to help others, that you could use to give to someone in time of need. And when you see that opportunity and you know that you could help someone, you can't, because you have wasted it on your addiction. I had evenings where I could have gone to serve others and help others, and I did not. I was wasting those opportunities. Isaiah 55, verse 2, why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Why are we wasting our resources on things that simply are not going to satisfy what we really need? That is the question. Addictions rob us of true joy. Virtually every addiction is coupled with negative feelings or deep remorse. I've mentioned multiple times my regret and my remorse after each failure. I saw myself as a total failure. And that has a lasting impact. I still struggle with that. Negativity is associated with extensive social media use. You think your life is a wreck and you go on, and what do most people post? They post about how their life is great. Let me give you a news flash. Not everybody's life is Pinterest perfect all the time. All right? And my daughters are on Be Real, and if you're under 20, you probably don't know what Be Real is. My daughters are on Be Real, and their Be Real posts are not real. Natalie's, it's supposed to like take a picture right then so people can see what you're really doing. It went off. She's like doing her hair and everything and checking it. I have known people who, if you looked at their Facebook profile and their posts, you would think that they were having an absolute perfect life. And I knew for a fact it was a wreck. But we don't know that. We get onto these social media and we say, my life's a wreck, but theirs is good, theirs is good, theirs is good. Everyone else is great and mine isn't. It's a lie. It's a lie. Now all of you are going to go post about how problems in your lives, I don't know. I won't know because I don't have it. Michelle will tell me and she'll get this text, what have you done, Jeremy? Sorry. Eventually, we deceive ourselves into thinking that the only time we are really enjoying life is during the addiction. That the only time that things are fine is when we're shopping. The only time we're really happy is when we're drinking. The only time that we really have any sense of joy is with pornography. And addictions, if left uncorrected, will rob us of our souls. Coming out of an addiction is hard. 20 years. It's about how long? It's partly because I didn't want to get rid of it. It was half-hearted. Michelle asked a question that asked that question when, before Natalie was born, so her oldest two were younger. That's when I was in the depth of it. But I still struggled with it. I still had relapses for many years afterwards. You cannot do this successfully without God. You cannot. We try and take away the opportunities. We try and do this and we try and do that. But you cannot do this without the desire being killed. You have to kill the desire. And God can help you with that. And you will not be the same. I'm sorry, you're not going to be the same. You will be scarred. For me, with pornography, it affected how I viewed my marriage. The expectations that I had going into marriage. It affected how I viewed women. It scars. It creates other challenges. I talked with a man who is a gambling addict, and he says, I can't even pick up like a game of Rook or Uno because just the feel of those cards in my hand reminds me of that addiction. He can't even play those innocuous card games with his family because it reminds him it's too much of a temptation. It scars us. It damages us. But Christ can heal us. So what can we as a brotherhood do to help with the addiction? This list is from a brother who is speaking specifically about addiction to pornography, but I believe the concepts can be broadly applied to all forms of addictions which we struggle with in the brotherhood. First, foster an environment of confession. We do a really bad job at this, I think. Confession ought to be met with compassion. Too often it is met with condemnation and criticism. I know of one brother who simply did not want to come forward because he saw what happened to others in the past. That they were criticized, they were condemned, they were gossiped about. Shame on us. When the addict comes forward, it's hard. I didn't speak because I didn't think there's anyone to talk to. You know, when we only talked about it because it was a really, really, really bad thing to do. It was a terrible and awful thing to do. And if you did this, it was shame on you. This is awful. So what am I doing? I'm doing this terrible thing that no one talks about except to hammer, hammer, hammer. So I didn't talk with anybody. I didn't think. So that changes today. That's why my name is up there. My name is there so you can know that you can turn to someone. If you are a man or a woman who's overcome an addiction, I encourage you to do the same, to add your name, so that people can know they're not alone. We need to teach the grace of Christ, that there is help, there's compassion, there's understanding, that we are not horrible people, that we have been caught up in horrible things, but we are still God's creation and God's children and loved and deeply loved. We need to be in the addict's life and to get involved. Addictions are isolating. Every addiction ultimately is isolating. We withdraw ourselves further and further and further from people. To the point that social media, the only time we interact with people is when we like their posts. We isolate ourselves. Get involved with the addict. Get involved with people. Bear one another's burdens. Part of this is to create accountability groups. If you are dealing with an addiction, having an accountability partner is really, really helpful. Find someone who has conquered it. Find someone who you are somewhat afraid of disappointing. Actually, like really afraid of disappointing. And if you are selected as an accountability partner, be an accountability partner. Reach out to them. Talk to them. There has to be an understanding of honesty. That if someone makes a failure, you need the person who fails, the addict needs to tell the person, hey, I had a bad week. I made a failure. Don't tell them that it's okay, because it's not okay, especially if it's sin. But don't condemn them. Have compassion and encourage them. And it also includes being there for those who have been negatively affected themselves by the addict's destructive behavior. Be there for the spouses, the children, the friends. Someone who has a gambling addiction may put their entire family in bankruptcy. You need to be there for them in whatever appropriate ways. You find out that their spouse is an addict to pornography. Be there for them. Fortunately, Michelle's had a few to help her. The addict is trying to change and others are trying to heal. Depending on the nature and the severity of the addiction, this can take years. Romans 7:15-20. If you were wondering at what point was I going to get to this passage, here we go. For what am I doing? I do not understand. For what I will to do, I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good. But now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will to do, that I practice. Now if I do what I will not do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that is evil and is present within me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is to my members. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, with the mind, I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. An addict once asked his counselor, "Is there hope?" Yes, there is hope. There's hope in Christ.